Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the ring. I, of course, am your host, the one and only. It's me, it's B.O.B. And with me this week for our Bobby Eaton tribute show is the man, the myth, the legend. I call him the professional. He has been in and out of the ring for several years and rubbed elbows with the best to the worst. Here he is, the one and only Nate Bash. How are you today, Nate?
Doing great, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming on. We're, of course, doing longtime listeners of the show will know that we've already we did a Bobby Eaton tribute show last year, but due to circumstances with the former co-host, we have had to send that one down the memory hole. So I'm excited to get it back up and in our library because I love Bobby Eaton. I love these matches. Nate, I think you were saying you really enjoyed watching these too, did you not?
I absolutely did. Yeah, I got to watch them all twice. Once, first time through as a fan, and then second time through taking notes. Still a fan, obviously. But yeah, I got to enjoy all these matches a couple of times. It's going to be a lot of fun talking about them.
Okay. So I guess we'll just we'll jump right into it here because the first match we have is from Wrestle War 1990, the Midnight Express versus the Rock and Roll Express. Of course, one of the most storied rivalries in tag team wrestling, which, well, to be honest, this is the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express is what got me into wrestling, really, really hooked me. You know, like I was I was a Hulk Hogan fan, and, you know, I was on the periphery of it, but it wasn't until we moved to South Carolina and I started getting WCW on cable and started seeing Ric Flair and Dusty and all of them. And the thing that really hooked me was the Rock and Roll Express, because I was like, these guys are just so cool and they're so good in the ring and they got that double drop kick and that looks cool. And then, of course, you had Jim Cornette and everybody just hated Jim Cornette, so you hated the Midnight Express, and they just worked it so well and got everybody involved over and really, like, Biff made me fall in love with tag team wrestling, and since then I've always been a huge fan of tag teams.
Yeah, this matchup was really great. The these two teams matched up so well. Obviously they wrestled so many times over the years, and they just had such perfect chemistry. They can do anything and make it look seamless.
Yeah. So let's see, we start, of course, they forgot to cut the music during Jim's introductions of the Midnight Express, so he's screaming while the music's still playing. Somebody got talking to that day, I'm sure. Sting does the intro for Jim. Robert Gibson and Stan Lane start out slow back and forth. Gibson gets up. Ref and Stan Lane gets into it, and then this is, you know, the spot Jim Cornette wants to fight the ref, and the ref says, well, he's down to fight, and Jim Cornette goes to get out of the ring and kind of just falls head over tea kettle out of the ring. Morton comes in, Stan and Bobby, they bumped into each other, if I remember correctly. Stan kind of starts looking pissed. Bobby comes in, great arm drags. I'm guessing that's the spot you were talking about before we came on the air, where Bobby comes in and immediately gets arm drags from Ricky Morton.
Yep.
Morton does a great spot where he climbs up Bobby, which I thought was just fantastic the way that they did that. Cause it didn't, I mean, it's obviously there is cooperation, but it looked natural. It looked like Bobby was just like, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah. And Ricky was a small enough guy that he could sort of scamper up someone like that and not make it look, too strange.
But, Jim pulls on a foot. Ricky, starts, chasing Stan, and, Jim gets knocked out of the ring. Ricky chases Jim. Stan and Jim get knocked out of the ring. Rock and Roll goes up, or is still up. Bobby starts throwing punches, which, of course, Bobby had beautiful, beautiful right hands. His punches are just look fantastic, and he does a couple of different ones. I think we'll talk about that a little later, but you can tell, like, sometimes he'll wear Ray back and hit you, right underneath the jaw on the side of the throat, and sometimes, he'll get you up on the top of the head. Really depends on what position he's in, but Bobby, great working punches. Morton throws a cross body, and both Bobby and Ricky Morton go to the floor, which I thought was a fantastic spot because it always, anytime Bobby did something like that where it was dangerous, he always made it, it always looked dangerous, but it also, when you start really looking at it, it's like he was in complete control the whole time.
Right, and this is where the storytelling of the high risk comes into play too, right? Because Ricky's going to do this spectacular looking maneuver that takes both men to the floor, but now both men are down. He injured himself in the process.
And then while Morton is down on the ground, Stan, because of the heels, Stan Lang comes down and slams Ricky Morton on the ground. And then Bobby's gets up, and they start getting heat on Ricky, because of course, I mean, you can't have Ricky Morton in a match and not beat the crap out of him, because that's what you do. Cornette uses the racket handle. Bobby delivers a great suplex. Gibson comes in for the save on a pin. Then Gibson gets in, but Eden drops Ricky on a barricade. Jim then punches him, and then while Jim Cornette distracts the ref, Ricky gets a roll up, but it's not counted because Jim's distracting the ref. Later, Bobby pulls out that neck breaker, and I always pause here because that Bobby swinging neck breaker, I don't even know if you'd really is would you call it a swinging neck breaker?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, so his swinging neck breaker is probably one of the best I've seen, especially from this era. It's just so smooth. Like he grabs the guy, and it's just boom, and it just looks effortless almost.
Yeah, Bobby's swinging neck breaker was great. He hits it. Yeah, he hits it so smoothly. That and his vertical suplex just looks so awesome every time.
Oh yeah.
Textbook, as we say.
Yeah, that's where it was. Yeah, the suplex. I had great suplex by Bobby, because he when he gets him up there and then just falls back, and it's almost like you want to do the little chef's kiss whenever you see it in the match, because you're like, oh, there's what I was looking for. Ricky's getting in just enough offense, which this is, key to the rock and roll. And I think this is something that we don't get enough of in tag matches today, where yes, you're getting heat on the baby face, but the baby face needs to be fighting back the whole time, not just sitting in a hold. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I in this middle part of the match where they're putting the heat on Ricky, I wrote the action doesn't slow down. Ricky just keeps fighting back, and then every time he gets a couple of shots, the Midnights hit a double team, and Ricky's back down again. And then they get one in the ring with him. He starts to fire back a little bit. Another cheap shot, another double team, back to the heat. It's great because it keeps things moving, and they do a really great job of changing levels. They'll have him down on the mat in a headlock and work to halfway up, and then all the way back to the feet, and then back down to the mat. And it makes it look like they're doing more than they are when they keep changing eye levels like that.
Oh yeah, I think it harkens back to what they call, I guess, working the hold, especially with Ricky, because Ricky was a great guy to work a hold with, if whether it was just a simple arm bar or a headlock or anything like that, because he would realistically sell it to where like you really thought he was in trouble,
Not everyone has the ability to perform that way with their face, the way that Ricky did.
No, they don't. And that's what got them over so good as baby faces, because he's an undersized guy to begin with, and then he looks like he's dying in there, and you just like it just it initiates that instinct in you to want to protect something. You see what I you know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. And it's less about the moves that are being done in the match and more about the story that's being told.
Oh yeah. Not that there's anything like the moves themselves all look
There's
so
nothing
good.
wrong with the moves.
Yes. I think yeah, like you were saying, lots of tags by the Midnight. Bobby delivers a great elbow off the top rope. Gibson comes in for the save. Stan distracts the ref, and Jim gives the racket to the throat. And then both I got both down from head bump. I guess Ricky and Robert, or yeah, Ricky and Bobby both went down. Or Ricky and Stan went down. I don't know who's in right there. But they both go down from the head bump, and then Bobby goes up for the rocket launcher. Ricky gets his knees up. Hot tag. The heels feed the comeback really well. But Jim gets the racket to Robert Gibson's back. Two count. Then Gibson gets the pin and the rocket roll win. That sequence there at the end, building up to the hot tag, and then they get the hot tag and the heels feed and everything's just boom, boom, boom to the end of the match is so good. It almost happens faster than you can really write it down. You know what I mean?
It does happen faster than you can write it down. You kind of have to pause and go back. But yeah, Robbie comes in, house of fire, as it were. And then he's bumping them both around. They're feeding perfectly for the comeback, like you said. Robbie goes to hit the ropes. Cornette's right there with the racket. Perfect shot. Cornette acts like, yeah, this is it. But he kicks out at two. And then, so they're going for the flapjack, the double flapjack, where they send him off the rope and lift him up. And then Ricky comes and interferes. Looks like he takes out Stan, and that allows Robbie to get the roll up on Bobby Eaton. Great finish.
Oh yeah, fantastic. I love that. Cool that they use that double flapjack for that too. I love that maneuver. I don't think it works qu
Invented by Jim Cornette.
yep. I don't think it works quite as well. I've seen people do it with one person where it actually works, but it's got to be a much smaller guy and a much bigger guy. But yeah, as a tag team move, it's just it looks so cool. And to have that one of their signature moves be the move that kind of not really turns the tables, but ends up backfiring on them is and then again, that harkens back to these guys have been fighting each other since 86. Even before that, if you go back to like Mid-South, they've been fighting each other since 83, 84. So, when somebody like, who was it? Is it, was it Ross and Shivani on this one?
On commentary, I think it was Jim Ross and Terry Funk on this one.
Oh, and Terry Funk. Yeah, that's right. Well, Terry Funk's really good on commentary. I enjoy him.
Yep.
I thought he does a good job. But yeah, when Jim Ross is talking like about how much these guys know about each other, and it comes into play for a couple of times with the when they go for the rocket launcher and Ricky gets his knees up. Just little things like that
That
show.
and the finish,
Yeah.
this the other signature maneuver, the flapjack, is what the reverses to get the finish. Yeah, absolutely. And the promo that Cornette cuts beforehand, he talks about some things never change. Certain things can be counted on always to change, and other things will never change, just like these two teams will keep fighting forever.
Oh yeah.
And that's a great.
So, there we have it. That was the first match. Great tag team match. I put all time great tag match because it really is. It's any of the rock and roll midnight matches you could pull out and be like, here, watch this. This is great tag team wrestling,
Absolutely. It was kind of hard to watch the Fantastics after this. N Nothing against the Fantastics. Obviously they're fantastic.
Yeah.
But after watching the chemistry that the Midnights and the Rock and Roll had,
Yeah.
it's hard to move on to anything else.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's a much different. Their Fantastics are a different style too than the they're
Completely different.
yeah. So, but of course they the I will say the Midnights and the Fantastics did have good in-ring chemistry. Was it as good as with the Rock and Roll? I don't think anybody could have better chemistry with the Midnight than the Rock and Roll did. But I think it's
agreed.
But this is an interesting match for several reasons. And we're gonna, I'll just go ahead and jump into it. Midnight versus the Fantastics for the U.S. Tag Titles at Great American Bash 88. Of course, the Fantastics, Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton. Jim does the intros for Stan and Bobby. Stan does the intro for Jim. In this match, Jim was supposed to be put in a straitjacket and hung above the ring. So there's a long part at the beginning of this match of just getting Jim into the straitjacket and into the ring. But being that he's Jim Cornette, there's a lot of people that could do this and it would just slow the whole thing down and just make it drag. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, but Jim milked the crap out of this and it was entertaining every second of it.
Oh yeah. He wants to get the straight jacket tailored because the sleeves are too long. He tries to bribe the ref, but the ref won't take it. They finally put him in and get the cage up in the air. Of course, the baby faces start shining early. Stan, he didn't use these much against the Rock and Roll, but Stan's kicks looked great in the beginning of this match. I don't know if it was the way they was being fed, or maybe he could just lay him in on Bobby and Tommy a little bit more, but they really looked spot on.
I think so, yeah. The Fantastics had a little bit sturdier build than the Midnights. You can lay your kicks in a little bit more on their midsections there.
Let's see. Stan goes into the ring post. Tommy Rogers delivers a beautiful crossbody. Jim Ross is kissing the athletic commissioner's ass in Baltimore. I had to write that down because I'm sure you know, but the Baltimore Athletic Commission was one of the most stringent athletic commissions there was. And they were actually the one who shut down the title match between Luger and Flair because Luger got a little cut on his head and it was bleeding.
Right.
And they said excessive blood, and the cut had already stopped bleeding by the time they stopped the match. But it was a bad day in Baltimore for everyone. But
yeah.
So Jim Ross is making sure to mention the athletic commissioner and talk about how good of a job they do, so on and so forth. All four of them get into the ring, and then the Fantastics clear it, which is really good. Bobby delivers that wonderful bulldog out of the corner. I think it was out of the corner. Wasn't there a running bulldog out of the corner, or did he come off the top with that one?
Yeah, I think, yeah, he had the guy in a I'm sorry, Stan was being pinned, and Bobby came and bulldogged guy out of it.
That's right. So he broke up the pin with the bulldog.
Correct.
Which was just, I mean, going back and if you go back and watch it, folks, it's seamless. Like you can't see through it. There's no, you know what I mean? Like,
it's, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The Midnight start taking over and getting heat. Bobby delivers another one of those great neck breakers for a two count. Eaton delivers that backbreaker, which he does a couple of other of these matches, and then kind of pushes down and stretches the guy. They do a double team behind the ref's back. They deliver that 360-degree backbreaker, which Jim Cornette calls the divorce court, which is another move that Jim invented.
Oh, yeah. Great stuff. Very innovative. Yeah, absolutely.
We get a good false hope spot into the abdominal stretch with Stan. I believe that's when Stan was pulling on the ropes, too.
Yep.
Which, of course, little things like that that the Midnight would do that people, I don't think enough people understand now as heels to do, or maybe they don't know. I don't know what it is, but I find that not enough heels cheat unnecessarily, if that makes any sense.
Well, or they'll do it right in front of the referee,
Well, yeah.
The Midnights were doing it surreptitiously where the referee wasn't seeing it. So all the people on that side of the ring are hollering their heads off. And then when the referee comes over, they tell him, "Hey, ref, they're cheating." But the ref doesn't see it. It really plays in the arena a lot better than it comes across on camera. But, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to cheat. You can't just do it right in front of the referee.
Yeah. Well, and also you got to, and Stan wasn't the best for this, but some of them, a ref or not, Ric Flair was good at this. Terry Funk was really good at this when the ref would ask him like, "Oh, was your hand on the ropes?" And they'd like make a big deal out of shaking their head and being like, no, I would never do that. I didn't have my hand
on
the rope.
How could you ask me that?
Yeah, exactly. So, it was, you know, another thing that's kind of, yeah, I don't like when they do it in front of the ref. That just makes the ref look stupid because that's, you know, the ref's there to enforce the rules. So anyway.
Well, and it makes it less meaningful for the people watching. If the audience knows that this is going to happen in the match and the ref's not going to enforce it and it just becomes a matter of course, then it doesn't matter when it happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's supposed to be against the rules and it's supposed to be enforced, but it's not being enforced, it's a reason to get upset and it's a reason to care more about what's happening in the ring.
The heat is in the cheat. So Bobby ends up going into the post. We get another false hope spot, but Bobby delivers the Alabama jam and Fulton comes in, breaks up the pin. They deliver the rocket launcher again, knees up, hot tag. Fulton makes a comeback. Midnight cut it off. The ref goes down. Bobby pulls out a chain and uses the chain, the Midnight win, and get the tag belts. In the aftermath of all of that, the Fantastics are screaming that Bobby had a chain. He's got it in his tights. So the ref checks Bobby's tights, and it's not there. And then when you go back, if you go back and you rewatch the pin, you can see Eaton before, as he's pinning, he pins Fulton, doesn't he? Or does he pin?
Believe so, yes.
Yeah, he puts the chain inside Bobby Fulton's tights. So then Bobby Fulton ends up with the chain, which I thought was a great, great little piece of business. But of course, then the Fantastics end up getting Cornette in the ring and getting the lashings on him. So they get a little bit of their shine back there at the end after the Midnight had cheated to win and embarrassed them. They get a little bit of a reprieve. But again, a great match. I really liked that end part with the chain and the switch in the chain. It was just, it's not something I even thought of until it happened. And I was like, holy crap, that's a great finish. Like, that's just fantastic to end up with the baby face has the chain in their pants. I don't know.
The whole finishing sequence was really brilliant. From the hot tag, all the way through Cornette getting the lashes after the bell. Fulton makes this great comeback, knocking them both around. He's hitting the ropes, almost hits the referee, but the referee drops down. Mm-hmm. Stan Lane trips him, pulls him to the outside and hits a body slam. Back in the ring, now Tommy Rogers hits the ropes. Bobby ducks. Rogers takes out Tommy Young, hits him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Now what while the referee is down, that gives Stan the opportunity to bring in the chain.
Yep.
Tommy Rogers comes over, sees him with the chain, hits Stan. Stan drops the chain. That's how Bobby gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bobby hits him, tucks it away, like you said. Great stuff. And then, of course, because the baby faces got cheated, you have to send the fans home happy with something. So Cornette gets the lashes. It's good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Really, really, really good stuff. And I forgot that Stan was the one who pulled out the chain. I didn't have that written down. And, of course, Tommy Young, one of the all-time greatest refs ever. I always try to mention that whenever he's reffing a match I'm talking about because he's just fantastic. You never see Tommy Young in a match unless you're supposed to see him, and then you see him for just the amount of time you're supposed to see him.
Yep.
Does that make, you know, like, There's stuff going all on all over the ring, and it's almost like he's not there until it's time for him to count somebody against the ropes or to break up an illegal maneuver or something like that. And then he's right there, he's on it, and he disappears again. I think a lot of people could look at. I'm certain that there's refs that do study him. I mean, the few refs I've talked to on Twitter are always, when I say Tommy Young, they're like, oh my God, he's the best. So,
yep. The best referees are absolute ghosts out there. Like you said, you don't notice them unless you're supposed to. We've got a guy up here in the Midwest who's been refereeing for 20 years, named Rob Page, mm-hmm. who's just like you described Tommy Young. He's one of the best out there. And both those guys, absolute ghosts.
There's a guy in NXT. He used to be in NXT UK. Now he's in NXT, named Chip Danning. And he's fantastic. He does a lot of tag matches, and he's a big rules enforcer. And I don't know how to put that any other way. Like, you can tell when he's doing a count out, like, you can hear him counting, you know, and when he's counting you down from five, you hear him. But the rest of the time, you don't hardly notice him at all. But when it's time for him to throw his authority in on something, I mean, I pay attention to it because I like watching the refs anyway, because I'd like to referee any, you know. So, but he's also like, if two people are in the ring, he's keeping track of who the legal man is, and he's yelling at the other guy to get out of the ring. Little things like that.
Yeah, and good referees too, you'll hear it in their cadence when they're making a count. They're not just counting because now this is the time when I'm supposed to count. A good referee, you'll believe them that they're going to count this person out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So it's always nice to see that. Of course, you've got, you know, Little Nate and people like that up on the main roster, but having him come over from NXT UK really made me happy, because, like I said, I loved his work in NXT UK, and I was like, finally, we've got somebody in NXT who will actually, nothing against the guys, the refs in NXT, but it's nice to see somebody really get to be a stickler about the rules, and because he's been with the company for so long, kind of hopefully influence some of the other guys in that locker room to be a little bit more, you know, because you never stop learning. That's any profession you're ever in. You never stop learning unless you just.
Yeah, the moment you stop learning is the moment you start dying. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. And unless you choose to ignore people. But I've always been a question asker. I want to ask everybody all the questions and, you know, find out what they're what's up.
Likewise.
But,
likewise.
So yeah, the Fantastics, that was a good match. Anything anything I missed or you wanted
to
say?
No. Nothing else really in my notes. I really enjoyed the finish. Like I said, they really did. There was a lot of movement in a short period of time, mm-hmm. and like you said, it was hard to keep up and write everything down. But yeah, it was good stuff.
It was
No, nothing really to add.
It was a very fast-paced match, too.
Yeah, they kept it moving.
You know, even during the heat spots, it was still like, it wasn't, you know.
I think it's noteworthy that it didn't feel like it slowed down, even though they weren't working as fast as the previous match that we watched.
Yeah,
just because of who the opponents were. Obviously, the Fantastics are carrying around a little bit more weight than the Rock and Roll, so they're going to move slower. Mm-hmm. So you're going to work a different style of match. And it didn't feel much slower, even though the moves that they were doing were definitely slower.
Oh, yeah. Now we get to Bobby in a singles match, Clash of Champions 15. So this one was on television. This was a television match.
Just a singles match, but Bobby has a babyface.
Babyface Bobby, yep. Bobby is a baby face after the Midnight had left, after Stan and Cornette had left to do Smoky Mountain. And we get Bobby Eaton versus Ric Flair for the big gold belt. And this is a 2 out of 3 falls match, nonetheless. And I've heard Jim say several times that Rick actually wanted to drop the belt to Bobby, like at a house show or something. Maybe, you know, even like in a contrived finish. He was like, Rick always felt that Bobby Eaton was such a great wrestler that he deserved to at least hold the belt for, even if it was just a few days or a week or something, just for him to have it.
A lot of guys had that opinion of Bobby, which, you know, no surprise. He when you watch him, he does all the little things right.
Yeah. And he was loved in the locker room too. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Bobby Eaton.
Nope.
You know, so we got Bobby Eaton, Ric Flair, 2 out of 3 falls. Great lockup in the beginning. Bobby slaps the taste out of Rick's mouth. I think one of those, like, not necessarily, but in kayfabe to kind of like wake Rick up and be like, you're going to take me seriously in this match. For the most part, in the very beginning, Bobby was like one step ahead of Rick. Countering, kind of shutting Rick down when he goes to do his usual stuff. Bobby's punches here are just a thing of beauty as a babyface, especially because he can make them. Well, because you're supposed to pay attention, you're supposed to cheer for him. You know, when he's a heel, punches are a little different. But as a babyface, he can really wind back and throw it. And does that make sense? Am I right on?
Yeah.
That?
Well, and Bobby does it in such a way when he's a heel and he throws a punch. It's so dirty and dastardly the way that he does it. Mm-hmm. But as a babyface, as with Rick, and as we'll see later with his singles match with Arn, where he's a babyface there as well, when he throws the punches as a babyface, it's like getting the drop on them, because he knows that they're gonna do something dirty first, so he's gonna beat them to the punch, so mm-hmm. to speak.
He gets a beautiful short arm scissors on Rick. Bobby did a nice move to get Rick away from. Oh yeah, that's right. He does the roll through where he's got him in the short arm mm-hmm. scissors, and Rick's going for the ropes, and he rolls through with the keeping a hold of the short arm scissors to get him closer to the middle of the ring, but still ends in a rope break. But really good sequence there. Rick goes to the outside, and Bobby follows, and this is where Rick takes over. He gets his feet on the ropes for a pin. But did the referee catch that one, or was that a kick out?
He kicked out. I don't have anything in my notes about feet on the ropes, so it must have not resulted in anything.
Okay. Eden starts coming back. Flair, they do the Flair top spot where he goes up to the top and Eden throws him off. Beautiful neck breaker follows that up, and then Bobby gets back on top. Hits the Alabama Jam, and Bobby wins the first fall, which was just, you know, good. Have Bobby come out there, look strong through the first fall. After the first fall, Bobby's still up. But then, where was it? He gets a neck maker, and... Oh, he goes
Flair
up.
Flair takes the Flair bump off the top, goes upside down in the corner. Bobby hits him with a backbreaker. Then the neck breaker, body slam, Alabama Jam. It's a bunch of offense,
yeah,
all in a row. After Flair does some of his signature stuff, it's really makes Bobby look great there.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, okay. Flair comes up the top, Bobby, and Flair hits the ropes, and Bobby falls. Okay, Bobby must have gone up to the top again. Flair hits the ropes, Bobby falls out, and there's a count out because Bobby hits his knee, if I remember correctly.
Yep. After the rest, Bobby goes back up to the top almost immediately.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then there's a superplex. Bobby delivers the superplex with the bad knee, but he can't capitalize. Bobby sells his knee. I love the way he sells his knee in this match because he's limping around the ring. You know, like he's using the ropes to stand up. He's not. I don't know how to put it. He's not just walking around like he normally would and then slapping his knee every 2 or 3 minutes. Like he's selling like he can't put weight on it.
Yeah. Both guys really are selling their asses off. Flair in particular, took a lot of offense from Bobby when mm-hmm. he lost that first fall, yep. and then scored the second fall real quick by catching a quick one on Bobby by shoving him off the top. But he's still selling. In the rest period between the second and third fall, both of these guys, it's only been 10 minutes of this match, and both of these guys look like they've been through it.
Yep. So let's see. Eventually, Flair gets the figure four. He's using the ropes for leverage, which doesn't get seen. And Bobby passes out from the pain. 1, 2, 3, Rick wins. Great match. Like you said, short match. Not a very long 2 out of 3 falls match, you know. But just so well put together and smooth and seamless. And, you know, you can't – I don't think there's much you could add to the match to make it better, and I don't think you could take anything out.
No, I agree with you. Because they started so hard-hitting and so snug with the chops mm-hmm. and the punches and the slaps and the going back and forth at the very beginning, it started out with the brawl. They skipped all of the feeling each other out, mm-hmm. mat wrestling, right. and went straight into a fight, which is how they were able to tell that story, that by the end of the first fall, Flair was beat up and he was done, and he wasn't, you know, he had to do something desperate mm-hmm. or he was going to lose this 2 out of 3 falls match to Bobby. And, you know, that's where the babyface left him an opening by going to the top. Flair takes advantage by pushing him to the floor, and, you know, it's more storytelling. He's down there. Now he loses the fall because his knee is injured. The momentum of the match has completely changed. Mm-hmm. Whereas a second ago, you thought Flair doesn't have a chance here. He's getting out wrestled by Bobby left and right. Mm-hmm. Well, now Bobby's hurt. Now Bobby doesn't have a chance. How's he going to beat the world champion on only one leg?
Yep.
You know, and it really takes you on that roller coaster of storytelling. It's masterful job.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It is something. I don't remember who said it, but the quote was, you can't start fighting and then wrestle. So if you're going to start a match hot, you got to kind of keep it hot for the rest of the match. If you're going to,
yep.
You know, if you so you can start out wrestling and build it to fighting, but you can't go the other way. So, and that's kind of something I've seen people trying to do that, you know, on various programs. I won't mention which, but I've seen people start out, they're punching each other and slapping each other and throwing chops. And then the next thing you know, they're trading holds. And it doesn't make any sense, because if you're that, if the issue between the two competitors is that intense, you wouldn't trade holds with them. If that makes any sense.
No, we're way beyond arm drags at this point, bud.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Once we're throwing fists. No. Yeah, exactly.
But Rick wins that fantastic match. Like I said, Rick really wanted to drop the belt to Eden at some point, but they wouldn't let him do it. Moving on to our next match, which is an interesting, I think this is a really interesting match. Not in length, not even in really in the story they tell in the match, more in the fact that the team that they're going up against is not very good, and they make them look a lot better than they are. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Midnight versus the Dynamic Dudes. Jim Cornette is in a neutral corner. They're playing this, which doesn't make any, you know, this whole thing with Jim would be in the, well, I don't know why Jim would be in the corner of Johnny Ace and Shane Douglas anyway, but we'll just, you know, we'll leave that for another day.
I don't really know either. Best I can tell, the stipulation was Jim Cornette had to remain impartial, and if he showed any partiality to either team, then the Midnights would be disqualified, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Near as I can tell, it was something like that.
I don't know. That sounds like a booking committee or some sort of it just sounds like a bad booking move. It sounds like somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. It has no clue.
Well, because the reason that I say that is because at the finish of the match, if we can skip ahead just a little bit, he jumps in the ring to take the chain away from Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be something in the stipulation where in front of the referee, he has to show that he's being impartial. But yeah. Then once the referee's not looking, he cracks him with the racket.
That's it. I don't know. Cause they're talking about how Cornette's been helping out the Dynamic Dudes and he's been coaching them about the Midnight. And that, for me, it looked like there was this whole, like, they were trying to switch Cornette over to being managing the Dynamic Dudes, or at least tease it. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. There's no way Cornette would want anything to do with these two guys. Like,
well, I'm not familiar with this era of WCW, so I couldn't tell you what was going on.
I'm really not either. I'm going by what they were saying. But anyway, Stan and Bobby are asking Cornette to be in their corner. Of course, the Dynamic Dudes come down on their skateboards. Johnny Ace almost falls off of his on the way down the ramp. Shane Douglas doesn't even bother. Because why? Cornette.
Because if you can't do something well, don't do it on camera.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have even had skateboards anyway. It's kind of a dumb gimmick, but whatever. Again, this is what, the early 90s, so.
Yep.
Let's see. Shane gets up early. Cornette. Starts snitching on Stan for pulling the hair. Johnny Ace comes in. I'll say this, Johnny Ace had a decent drop kick. that's really...
He got some height. Yeah, he got... I wrote that down, too. He got some good height for a guy that size.
But other than that, he really didn't do a whole lot. Shane Douglas was in for the majority of this match. I think Johnny Ace was in, like, once or twice, because he comes in with Stan... for like a second and then gets back out. Let's see. Shane dives onto Bobby on the outside. Bobby's throwing those right hands. Shane does a really bad crossbody. Crowd was actually hot for the Midnight in this one, which I wrote down. They were cheering for the Midnight Express here.
Yeah. You think they maybe saw through the dudes a little bit?
Yeah. I think that's probably exactly what it was. Stan's kicks, again, look great. They do the rocket launcher, knees up, hot tag. Stan breaks up the pin. Stan and Johnny get tied up. Bobby has a chain. Cornette, this is what you were talking about. Cornette comes in, gets the chain, throws it out, tells Shane to get on Bobby, and then immediately smacks Shane in the back with the racket. The Midnight win, and the crowd goes pretty banana. For the heels going over in this one.
Yeah, I have the word, I didn't realize this when I was making my notes, but I have the word weird on this page three different times, and all three times it has something to do with Ace.
Yeah.
He had a weird exchange with Stan in the beginning before he hit that nice drop kick.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, he gave somebody a weird monkey flip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bobby took a weird monkey flip.
That's right, because Bobby lands, like, he takes the monkey flip, but he overrode. I think he pushed Bobby too much, and Bobby landed, like, or not enough, because Bobby landed weird. I don't remember if he landed, like, straight on his ass, or...
It was really strange.
Yeah.
Yep. But weird, three times on this page, and all three times it pertains to Ace.
Oh, pervy Ace.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yep.
Weird guy did some weird stuff.
Well, and there's other parts of it, because I noticed this when I was watching it the other night, where he tags out and Shane's in trouble in there, and he's just kind of standing there in the corner. And it's like, you can't, if you're in a tag team, you've got to live and die by what is going on with your partner in the ring. Because if you don't care what's going on with your partner, why in the hell should anybody in the audience give a crap? You know?
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely. 100%.
If you watch the rock and roll, Robert Gibson is like dying to get in the ring the whole time Ricky Morton's there. Like, he's even, and sometimes he'll even run in the ring and get caught by the ref, you know, like just get overzealous and be like, no, I got to do something, you know, which, you know, usually sets up for a heel double team, but still, it, you know, great work. I think a couple of weeks ago, Well, this was more than that, but Rob and I were doing an old episode of WCW, and it was Rick Rude and Manny Fernandez versus the Rock and Roll Express on television for the tag team titles. And which was weird to begin with, because it was like they never showed tag titles, not, and it was a title change too. So the Rock and Roll dropped the titles, but that happened a lot. There was a lot of Robert trying to get in, the referee doing it, and then them doing the switch, the no tag switch, where they just, you know, one guy comes in, the other guy goes out, and while the other guy's going out, he just claps his hands like there's been a tag, you know. Which was the crowd was all, oh, they were eating it up. Like they were just booing every time they did it. Like the crowd just got louder, either cheering for Ricky or cheering for Robert or booing the heels. It was something I'd never see people do anymore, and I wish they would, because again, the rules, if you got a guy who's enforcing the rules and you break the rules behind his back, it really helps the heels look like dirty rule breaking bastards, you know?
You may not see it a lot on TV, but if you go to the right indie show, you'll still see guys telling a story like this.
But yeah, it was fantastic. Fantastic that was. The Dynamic Dudes match, like I said, that was more goddamn Stan and Bobby gave these guys a great match. And I mean, Shane Douglas is Shane Douglas, you know. He was in ECW. He wasn't he Dean Douglas in
He
WWF?
was.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's not, I mean, I guess he's, you know, a mid-card guy. You know, I don't know that much about him, but you know, he's not awful in the
He
ring,
was
but yeah.
trained by Dominic DiNucci alongside Mick Foley, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think that they were trained at the same time.
So I mean
In
he's
fact, they
not
might have wrestled each other in their first match.
I wouldn't be surprised. But so he's not a bad wrestler, but Johnny Ace is just not good, especially when you were talking about that weird thing with him and Stan, 'cause it was like Stan would go down and wait for Johnny Ace to get on him, and then Johnny Ace would just stand there and be like, "You've got to come to
Yeah,
me."
he just posed or something.
Yeah. It was like he would just, he
Yeah,
would.
Stan came in like he was going to give Ace some offense, and instead of taking the opening that Stan was giving him, Ace just stood there and posed and did something weird.
Yeah. He was doing the little finger thing like Nakamura does, or like, "Come to me." Instead of, but like, it was, I was like, what is he doing? Like,
No,
get
it
on
was out
him.
of place
Like,
because Stan was feeding him. He
you
was
know.
giving him, I don't know, take an arm drag or give me something.
Well, yeah, because Stan would
And
be like pretty much
Ace
on his
didn't pick it
back.
up.
Like, if you're on your back and you're giving somebody your legs and arms, like, do something, and they don't, like, it's got to be, that had to be a frustrating match for them. That's probably why Johnny only was only in a couple of times, because they were probably like, Shane, you're carrying this match for your partner. Don't tag him in.
I could absolutely see that happening.
Anyway, moving on this to another fantastic match, and this one in Baltimore, and this is one of this match is weird for the main reason that the Midnight Express might as well have been the baby faces in this match. And I've heard Cornette talk about this one before. It's the Midnight Express versus Who Are the Champions versus the Southern Boys, the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys, Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong for the US tag titles. Now Cornette, according to Cornette, the reason, well, one, the Midnight had been coming to Baltimore for 4 or 5 years, so people were used to their gimmick. Two, the Southern Boys aren't going to get over in Baltimore.
Nope,
Baltimore's,
not with Confederate flags on their gear,
yeah,
they're not.
Baltimore is a Yankee town, no matter what you want to think, and that's the Confederate flag. Well, that wouldn't fly anywhere now, I don't think, unless you're a heel, If you're a heel, probably. But even then, there's going to be people that are
Even
going
then, yikes.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it's heat, and I certainly see that's old school heat, and so I can see where if done right, there could maybe be a place for that. But I can also see where it would offend enough people that maybe promoters wouldn't want it on their show.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I saw George South at, do a show recently. It was George South versus Jerry the King Lawler, and I was fortunately for him, this was in Spartanburg, South Carolina, so he could do his shtick. But he kind of, his whole thing is kind of a right wing, no PC heel. You know what I mean? So he comes out,
sure,
and makes fun of the audience, and you know, so on and so forth. Basically, just, you know, right wings it. He Republicans it up. And, you know, some of the people laugh, some of the people boo. It's kind of, you know, a mix one way or the other. But because he's the heel, he can kind of get away with that, you know. But
sure,
he doesn't come out with a rebel flag and wearing gray fatigues, gray military, because they come out in the. So
what you're saying is he's an old school heel where, yes, he's there to get his heat. He's not there to sell t-shirts and pal around with the guys at the bar afterwards.
Yes.
With all the marks.
Yeah.
He's an actual old school heel getting old school heat. Now that I'm okay with.
Yeah. Well,
but if he's a cool heel who hangs out with all the fans at the bar after the show, and he's there to sell t-shirts and get his funny line in, then it's definitely not okay.
Well, he does have
or
a
something
merch
like
stand.
That. That's not, because you're not getting real heat.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
He has a merch stand, but
there's
he
a difference
like
between
kind of
trying to make your money.
But he was also he was a grumpy Gus at his merch stand too. So I have a feeling that,
yeah,
you know, I don't know how much of an actor and how much of it isn't. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to this match. With the Southern boys coming out in their full rebel, their full Southern Confederate regalia, being the, basically might as well have been the heels here. We got a hot start. Bobby does the top rope flare spot. Armstrong is, Steve Armstrong, super athletic. Crowd's chanting for Bobby. The Southern boys get up. Really, the only time the Midnight got any heat in this whole match was when anytime Cornette interfered, because they liked Bobby and Stan, they still hated Cornette. So we get Cornette sucks chance. Stan comes in and faces off with Tracy Smothers. I thought that was a really cool spot where they did the little bit of the kind of like almost traditional karate stance fight deal. Southern boys start to win over the crowd a little bit with their athleticism. That pin, I wanted to stop right here. Tracy Smothers does this thing where he basically skins the cat backwards and then does a pendulum kick, uses the momentum to then hit a pendulum kick to the outside, which I thought was just fantastic.
That was pretty incredible.
The athleticism on that was just amazing. Armstrong delivers a good double cross body. They go over the top rope as Jim distracts the ref. I forgot about that. That's over the top rope was still an automatic disqualification. But Jim had the ref distracted. So let's see. Stan and Jim get in an attack on the outside. Midnight takeover. There's Alabama Jam and then a tag to Stan. Smothers starts fighting back. There's a hot tag. Armstrong makes a good comeback. Southern boys deliver I forget what they call it. It was basically a doomsday device, but with a drop kick instead of a clothesline, which looked really cool. But the ref is distracted, so he misses the pin. By the time he gets it, there's a kick out. Bobby pushes Armstrong off the top rope. Rocket launcher, two count. Armstrong ends up getting the cradle. Stan breaks up that pin. Stan gets in a sneaky kick. Bobby gets the inside cradle and the midnight win. Really good. Everything, like, there wasn't really any bad spots in this match. This was a really well put together match. Very, very fast paced. Loved how athletic the Southern boys were for how big they are, especially. But yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What I was going to add about this is that the way that the Midnights got their heat on the outside of the ring made it so meaningful, that made the things that they did on the outside of the ring meaningful.
Yeah.
They bumped him once, put him into the barricade once, and he sold it, you know, he sold it to the moon, like it was killing him. All the stuff on the outside was so much more meaningful. It was so much more meaningful way to gain an advantage because it wasn't supposed to be happening. It's illegal.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas rather than the brawl goes all over the building and, like we said earlier, and it's just kind of expected to happen as a matter of course, it means something when he gets, oh, he threw him out to the floor. What a dastardly way to cheat. And now the referee's distracted. You put him into the barricade one time and he sells it like it killed him. Well, that's how they gained the advantage in the match and had the ability to put heat on him to begin with.
Oh,
right.
Jim,
it's not just Jim this is the part of the match where we fight on the outside.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Jim hits him in the throat with the tennis racket, too. If I remember correctly.
Yep. But it's not just a matter of course. This is where we fight on the outside for a while. Then we go back inside and do some more moves. Yep. It's no, we go to the floor to cut him off because that's where we can cheat.
Yep. Good point. Very good point. Thank you. But, like I said, Smothers and Armstrong, both fantastically athletic, really is a very, again, like all four of these matches with the Midnight are all four very, very different teams. Really, when you look at it, one very not so good team, one large athletic team. The Fantastics are athletic but smaller, about, you know, and then of course you've got the Rock and Roll, which is a whole different, almost a big man, little man. I mean, Robert Gibson's not a huge dude, but he's a lot bigger than Ricky Morton is. So you've got in all four teams work differently, yet the Midnight had a great match with all four of them. So
absolutely.
And a large part of that is Bobby, you know. I mean, he was, and I'm a little sad. I might have to go back. I might make this kind of a yearly thing with Bobby and do another six matches or so next year. Cause I want to get some with Dennis. Cause Dennis Condrey is one of the most underrated guys. I mean, even when you talk about the Midnight Express, everybody thinks of Stan and Bobby, but Dennis and Bobby were so good. And Dennis worked such a different style than Stan did, yet still meshed with Bobby perfectly
I think you see elements of Dennis in this later version of Bobby that teams with Stan.
I think you're right. And it's so weird to think, like, when they're like, oh yeah, they've been in the business for 10 years and they're like 26, you know what I mean? Like,
sure. I'm like, yeah. Absolutely.
Goodness gracious. Like, just so much, so much. And of course, you know, Bobby again, and also, you know, Bobby had that run with William Regal, which I know wasn't a world beater by any stretch of the imagination, but I've never really seen any of their matches, and William Regal and Bobby Eaton sound like a tag team I need to see. So
that sounds like a tag team I need to wrestle. Can you imagine being a young tag team and getting to have a match with a tag team like Regal and Bobby Eaton?
Right.
Incredible.
And Regal was still really young then too. Bobby was the veteran in that team. So that's, man. Oh, that's something else. But this was a good match. And again, Typical Midnight Express, fast. And this is something that Cornette's mentions all the time. And I think the more I watch tag team wrestling today, the more I think that somebody needs to sit some people down and talk about this. Once you get the hot tag, once the baby face makes a comeback, unless you're going to do two hot tags, unless you're going to cut them off,
Yeah, no, we're going home.
yeah, you get the hot tag, you need to go home, because you can't build towards that and then completely shut it off and then build towards it again.
You have to have something bigger to build towards
Yeah.
if you're going to do that.
But yeah, great tag team wrestling by both teams in this one. I mean, the Southern boys didn't really get that thrown off by having people not cheer for them when they were supposed to be the baby faces, which credit to them, because I think there's a lot of people that would, you know.
Funny, something I just thought of. You were talking about if you're going to work to a second hot tag. We used to call it the lukewarm tag. If we were going to do two hot tags, the first one would be the lukewarm tag.
Yeah.
It's not quite hot yet because it has to be less so
Yeah.
that the hot tag can be the big one.
Yeah. But yeah, the one where they're throwing babies in the air and people are
Yep.
about ready to rush the ring because they're so pissed off that the baby face can't get to his corner to get his
Yep.
guy in.
Nope, but you can't have two hot tags because the second one won't be as hot if the first one's hot. So the first one's got to be the lukewarm tag, then the hot tag.
Very true, very true. Good point. See, this is why we have you here, Nate.
It sounds a lot more clever after a 15-hour road trip, I promise.
No, but you're absolutely right. You do have to do something to make the first tag like, okay, yeah. They've got, okay, all right.
It's meaningful, but not as much.
Yeah. It's like
Yep.
when somebody goes for their big spot, but they don't, and they get it, but they don't really get it, So, oh well, yeah, that was it, he thought we might have him, but not really.
Or it's more like it's in music, right? If you've got three choruses in a song, the second chorus isn't going to be the biggest one. The third chorus has to be the biggest one. You can have if you have two choruses, it's got to be one calm one and then one big one. But you can have a big one, a small one in the middle, and then a big one at the end.
That's true. Well, I've said I actually almost wrote a Twitter post about this the other day about the similarities between being a musician and performing either songs or performing a set or performing as part of a set with other musicians doing a concert and a wrestling card or a wrestling, even a match. Like, you got to use dynamics. You've got to, start big, build to something, then maybe calm it down a little bit, then build something else, and then maybe calm it down a little bit. It can't all be one note, 100 miles an hour the whole time, because that's gets old very quick. That's why, most punk band
1,000%.
songs are only about 2 minutes long, because you can't just do that. It's not, it gets boring. So, and there's other things, like you don't want to, if like I used to do open mics, and I'd always, like, if I knew any of the other guys that were in the open mics, I'd ask them what songs they were covering, so that I didn't go out there and cover the same thing that they were going to cover later in the show if they went on after me. You see what I'm saying?
You don't say.
Like, it sucks, and it would suck sometimes because some of the songs that I like doing, like I loved, I did a really fun Dylan-esque version of his song All on the Watchtower, but at the time Dave Matthews had just released his version, so and a lot of guys were doing that because it was a college town, so you're gonna get the girls if you cover Dave Matthews. So I would, that was one I had to kind of take out of my set and replace with something else for a while because everybody else wanted to do their cover. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'm not going to
Sure.
come out here and step on your toes. If you want to do that, if you, and I think that that's another thing that,
Yeah, it's like if you know that the person in the match before you does the, what do they call it? The air raid spiral, the air raid crash.
Yeah.
For a false finish, right? Maybe you ask them, hey, you doing the air raid crash tonight? Before you just do it in your match too. Britt Baker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that happens all the time on that program where if somebody's going through a table, that should be the only person that goes through the table on that show. Because then it means something. Then it's meaningful. If you have somebody go through the table in segment one, somebody go through two tables in segment two, and then somebody go through a table in the main event, well, we've already seen three people go through tables. So what does this mean? You know?
Means nothing.
But that, I feel the same way. They do that when they do the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which I hate. You know,
agreed.
You know, you're gonna, you should only be one Hell in a Cell match, and I don't even think there should be a
Hell in a Cell. I don't even think they should do it every year.
I don't think it should be a pay-per-view. I think they should wait until there's an actual reason to have a Hell in a Cell match. Yeah. There's
correct until a match calls for it.
Yeah, until the feud calls for the match. You don't want a match. You don't need a match that needs a feud. You want the feud to need the match.
Exactly.
So, anyway, as we move on to our last match, speaking of matches, this one from Super Brawl 1991. Oh, and I also want to give a shout out here, because if I remember, the Dynamic Dudes match was Ross and Gordon Sully?
I did not write down who the commentators were for that match. It was Jim Ross, and I can't remember.
But I know the Southern Boys was Jim Ross and Bob Cottle. And I just wanted, if any of you are out there and don't know, anytime you can get a chance to go back and watch Starrcade 83, Gordon Sully and Bob Cottle are two of the best announcers in such a unique style, and it really, they add so much. Their commentary is not over the top. It's very, very matter of fact, very knowledgeable. They don't get super excited. They do get excited about stuff, but they don't get super over the top excited about every little thing, and it really adds to the sports feel of the presentation, where they take it very, very seriously. They know, you know, all the moves or most of the moves. If they don't, they'll say, you know, that's something I've never seen before. I don't really know what to call that. It's some sort of this. And it just, it makes watching it so much more enjoyable. And actually, if you don't know a lot about wrestling, proper professional wrestling, it really is an education to listen to those guys call it, because they break everything down. It's almost like Gorilla Monsoon was really good about that too. He would always, you know, if somebody was in a hold, he knew, well, what muscles is that hold working? What can you do to get out of it? So on and so forth. It's good to watch.
And if he didn't know, he would make it up.
Oh yeah, he would. He would totally make it up. But he'd make it up with such confidence that you didn't know if he was making it up or not.
With such conviction that you believed him. Absolutely.
So, anyway, moving on. Super Brawl 1991. I say that because this one is Dusty and Jim Ross. And I love Dusty Rhodes to death, but I really never particularly cared for him as a commentator.
I think that's a pretty universal opinion.
Yeah. But anyway.
He actually wasn't that bad here.
Yeah, no, he really wasn't. I think this. I think
as Dusty on commentary goes, this was pretty manageable.
Yeah, well, I think part of it was he had such respect for Eaton and Arn Anderson that he didn't want to, because a lot of his commentary would ended up sounding more like him getting himself over than commentating the match, or if that makes any sense, making it about him.
No, commentators would never do something like that.
Dusty certainly would never do something like that.
No, pro wrestling commentators, none of them would ever do that.
Well, at least he didn't have a sock on his face. Let's just
well,
So anyway, this is for the television title, Arn Anderson versus Bobby Eaton. The crowd's chanting for Bobby right at the beginning, which is great. Another, again, that big right hand by Bobby puts Arn down, and Arn gets up and kind of like, he's like adjusting his jaw. He's really selling it. Kind of has
Yep.
that wide-eyed, like, I wasn't expecting that. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, just a lot of basic offense back and forth in the beginning here, punches and kicks between the two of them. Snug, kind of like the Flair match too, but not as fast. These guys started out slower.
Arn takes over. Bobby keeps fighting back. Arn does some great heel work in this match. I don't remember exactly what he was doing that I wrote that, but I mean it's Arn Anderson, so he was probably holding onto the ropes or thumbs of the eye or something. Bobby gets thrown off the top rope onto the ramp. Then he
Did
backdrops
you notice that
Arn.
that was a rocket launcher? Arn gave him the rocket launcher onto the ramp.
I did because I thought he was going to take the Flair bump at first, where he went over and landed on his back, but then he landed face down. I was like, oh.
Yep. Something a little different. Nope. Everybody else would have made, well, nobody was taking that onto the ramp at the time, but where you would expect one thing, he gave you something different.
Bobby always thinking.
Yep.
Then Bobby backdrops Arn onto the ramp, and then Bobby starts working the arm. Arn gets a cheap shot on the rope break, and Bobby's knee goes into the ring. Then he pulls Bobby out and slams his knee into the ring post like three times, wasn't it? It was more than
Yep.
once. Remember that. Arn starts working the leg. See, he's using the rope for leverage. He was doing that. I've never seen that either. It's not like the twist that Funk would use, because Funk would do the twist that Flair does right before he puts you in the figure four. I forget what that's called, but it was similar to that. But he had the leg almost
Oh,
straight, but
like
he
the
was.
funk spinning toe hold.
Yeah, the spinning toe hold, that's it. It was like a spinning toe hold, but he had the leg a little bit straighter. I don't know exactly how to put it. Either way, it obviously Bobby's selling the hell out of it. It looks good. Orange using the rope to get leverage to help him twist the leg even more. Bobby starts selling the knee, which of course we already said in the Flair match, Bobby can sell the hell out of his knee. The way he moves around the ring. I liked it when Bobby introduced Arn's head to every turnbuckle. I was like, I enjoyed that, though. I'd seen Matt Hardy do it a bazillion times, but to see Bobby do it and actually do it like he's actually putting Arn's head into the turnbuckle with everything instead of just kind of going through the motion of putting somebody's head near a turnbuckle was nice.
Yep.
Arn goes back to the leg. And then Bobby goes for a suplex and the leg comes into play. Leg falls out on him on the suplex. And Arn goes back to the leg. Arn goes to hit a splash. Did Arn go up to the top rope?
Vader bomb off the second.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, Vader bomb off the second. Bobby gets his knees up. But Arn hits a spine buster for a two count. Bobby hits that beautiful neck breaker, goes up to the top. And then Wyndham comes in for the save. Pillman
Thumbman
comes out
stops
after
Wyndham
him.
there, yeah, from interfering.
And then they fight off to the back. So that was pretty negligible, in all honesty. I don't even know why that needed to happen in this match, because it didn't change anything. Bobby hits the Alabama Jam and wins new TV champion, which is, if I remember correctly, that's the only singles title Bobby Eaton ever held was a television championship. But I
I
love
guess
this.
with the interference or the supposed interference would be Was this at a time when Wyndham was with the Horsemen? Maybe he was coming to help
Yeah.
Arn.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Wyndham was coming
So
down to
just
help.
to add a little bit of chaos at the end so that it
Yeah.
wasn't it, if you're gonna get a clean win over Arn 1-2-3, let's dust it up a little bit.
Yeah, I got you. I
Probably all
got
that
you.
that was.
That makes sense. You dusted up? Is that a little Dusty reference there? Because it sounds like something he
Wink, wink.
And then great thing I love about this, and this again something you don't see enough anymore. Bobby continues to sell his knee while he's celebrating with the title. I bet you he limped all the way back to the locker room too.
I guarantee he did.
And that's
And then
something.
Jim Ross puts him over on commentary saying, basically saying Bobby Eaton silencing all the critics, everyone who said he was just a tag team wrestler.
So there you have it. There's the
Yeah.
there's
Not just the selling, but he portrayed an emotion that you can feel at the end there after the referee counts the three and Bobby pops up with his hands in the air and he sells the leg and then he hugs the referee. It feels like a genuine moment.
It really does. Really does. And it really, I think it really speaks to, and you know, this is all, you know, you hear about Bobby when you hear people talk about him, is he was the most humble person and he never thought he really deserved any of the accolades he got or anything like that. Which I definitely, so it almost makes it, you know, hearing that now and then seeing his reaction there, it almost makes it feel like he really did, like he was so shocked
He
and
was
just,
really having that, oh my God, I did it
yeah.
moment.
That, oh my
Yeah.
God, they really believe in me enough to put this title on me, you know? And at the time, the TV title was a huge deal. Like, it wasn't, you know, like it would be later on, the TV title wouldn't be as important as the US title. It wasn't really, but at the time,
Well, and it was his first singles title
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and
It's
that's
your
true
first
too.
singles title is a big deal. I remember mine.
So. But yeah, so it just, you know, speaks to the type of person Bobby was. And I'm always going to be a little bitter because I think that the Midnight Express should be in the hall of, in the WWE Hall of Fame. I know that they're not WWE guys, but since WWE owns WCW and they were WCW guys, and
Yeah.
I'm just sad that they didn't do it while Bobby was still alive because I think that that would have really meant a lot to him. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah, I agree with you.
some guys kind of, you know, oh yeah, it's a Hall of Fame, whatever. I think Bobby is one of those guys, just hearing the stories about when they even did the Bobby Eaton celebration, you know, when all of his friends and former co-workers and, you know, guys he'd been in the business with for years all gathered together to give him a plaque and celebrate him and talk about how great he was. And he didn't really think he deserved it. I think being in the Hall of Fame would have meant something more to him than I think it does a lot of people. So, but that is what
Yeah.
it is. Go ahead.
Yep. I would say that as long as they keep inducting people and teams, the Midnights will be in eventually.
Oh yeah. I mean, oh, I'll be honest with you. They should have inducted the Midnight the year after they inducted the Rock and Roll Express because, in all
Yeah.
honesty, I don't think there would be a Rock and Roll Express without the Midnight Express. I mean, you could do it the same
Yeah.
way. I don't think there would be a Midnight without the Rock and Roll, but I think definitely the Rock and Roll benefited from there being a heel team that was so good at being a heel team and so good at getting heat that they knew how to get Ricky and Robert over without really Ricky and Robert having to do a whole lot of, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a baby face is only as good as the heel that he's facing.
Well, that's something. Was it Stan Hansen that was saying that when he was inducted? And he was like, you got to have a, oh no, it was Vader, I think. He's like, you got to have a good opponent. You got to have great opponents. If you have a, if you can have a great opponent and have a great feud, wherever you go, you'll always get over. So there you go.
Yep, but you can't do it by yourself. Nobody can do it. Nobody can do it by themselves.
Oh no. But so that's it. That's it for our Bobby Eaton tribute show. Of course, you know, it's been a year now. It's still weird to me because I think about it. I'm like, oh, I want, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to put it. Like, I'll see something and, you know, I'll think, or I'll see something or Jim will say something and I'm like, I wonder if Bobby and Dennis are going to, you know, and then I'm like, oh, shit. Or I'm like, oh, look, there's Dennis. I wonder if Bobby's going to be at this. Oh, because I'm like, you know, that's one of those things. I never got to go to a signing or anything with them at it. And that kind of makes me sad, too, because, you know, I mean, I'm at the end of the day, I'm still a mark. I still mark out for guys like that, you know. So
absolutely.
I mean, hell, I marked
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
My wife and I marked out. We went to the Go Home SmackDown for SummerSlam. We didn't. I mean, we marked out between ourselves. He was busy, but we're walking out of. We're staying in downtown Atlanta in a hotel room because we're of the age where if we go to a concert or we go to a show, we're gonna go back to the hotel room and go to sleep and go home the next day. You know what I mean? So we're walking out of our hotel room and there's Drew McIntyre on his phone. I guess he was probably waiting for his Uber or whatever. And I'm like, holy shit, that's Drew McIntyre. My wife's like, fuck, that is. So we were just like, good luck tonight as we walked past him. You know what I mean? Just kind of waved and said good luck. Because, you know, he's busy. I don't want to like... He's, you know, he's got a show. We don't want to get up in his face and be like, oh.
Hey, there's a famous guy. Let's go bother him.
You know, I mean, if it was, if we had a kid with us and the kid wanted to do that, I'd be like, okay, that's, you know, that's a kid. But that's a thing kids can do. As a 40-plus-year-old man, I'll just wait to wait till the time is appropriate. Now, I did, when we got back to the hotel after the thing, we decided to go to the bar and have a drink, and Kayla Braxton and some of her friends came in, and I did come up to her right before we left and be like, we saw you tonight, thank you so much, you're a big part of the show and we appreciate what you do, me and my wife. And then my wife, you know, waved from the end of the bar, so she didn't think I was some creepy guy. That makes any sense, but you know what I mean. It was literally like a 30-second, you know, interaction, because I really did. I just wanted to go up and be like, "Thank you," like, especially for somebody who's, you know, an interviewer or something like that. I'm sure she doesn't get a bunch of people like scrambling to be like, "Oh, thank you so much." So I wanted to, you know,
as long as you're respectful and you don't take up too much of their time, I think most famous people like to hear that you're there, that you're a fan of theirs.
Oh yeah. Well, that's exactly what I said. I was like, I know you're here with your friends, so I wanted to make this really quick and just say that we were at the show. Thank you so much. And me and my wife. And I was like, and it's funny that you interviewed Drew McIntyre, because we literally saw Drew right before we left this hotel to go to the thing. And she was like, that is funny. So anyway, good times, good times. Like meeting people. But yeah, that's it for the Bobby Eaton tribute show. Anything else you want to add about Bobby or the Midnight or any of these matches in particular?
Not really. Nothing that we haven't covered. Anybody who's, you know, learning how to wrestle, Bobby's a guy to study. He does all of the little things right. He's unselfish in the ring. Always makes his opponent look great. Never stops selling, never gives up on what he's doing. I guess by that I mean, he won't lose sight of, he won't stop the story of what they're doing to go do something else, or stop selling to go on offense or anything like that. He keeps the consistency all the way through. But yeah, it's really hard to describe someone who does all the little things right, other than to say they do all the little things right. And if you know what you're looking for, you see it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that that's probably one of the best ways to put it. One of the smoothest, most natural looking workers. As
Yep.
nothing he
Everything
does.
just came so instinctual to Bobby that, he truly was one of a kind. There are people who get it on another level, and Bobby was absolutely one of those.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you hear that when Jim talks about how he was trying to get Bobby to teach people how to do the knee drop off the top rope. And he's like, "Corny, I can't really explain it. I just do it." And it's just, I think it's one of those things. Like any profession, when you're that, just, I don't want to say gifted because it's a lot of hard work, but when you understand the goal that you're trying to accomplish that easily, then it makes the hard work between getting from point A to point B a lot easier. And
Yep.
so it's just, this was a lot of fun. Let's
It
see.
was absolutely. Yep. When you and Bobby was the kind of guy, and there are some people who can do this their entire lives and they think they get it, but knowing how to do moves is not the same as getting it. And then you watch somebody come in like a Pat McAfee or what's his name, Logan Paul. Who they get it. Obviously, they understand what we're here to do. And you can just see it. It's the showmanship and some of those things with those two guys, even though some of the physical stuff doesn't necessarily come as naturally to them, you can tell they're getting it.
Oh yeah.
So, and Bobby was there. They have that, what Bobby had,
Yeah.
that natural showmanship, that natural getting it.
Yep. The eyes on the goal. Eyes on the prize.
They know
Definitely.
what we're here to do. Yep.
Definitely. So, as we wrap things up, anything you want to put over or plug while you got you here? Any shows you're involved with or anything?
No, nothing that I'm involved with really. Support local wrestling. If you don't like what you're seeing on TV, find an indie talent that you really like and seek out their stuff and watch them.
Definitely.
The IWTV app is a great resource. They've got a lot of great indie wrestling. So yeah, I mean just because you don't like what's on TV doesn't mean you have to stop watching wrestling. There's a lot of great stuff out there.
Oh yeah, and look around. I know I'm in, I don't want to say BFE, Georgia, but I'm in, we're about, 30 minutes outside of Atlanta, and there's a town about 20 minutes from here that is independent wrestling. You can go on, just look professional wrestling near me on Google, and I'm sure you'll get something. And those are the places that really need, your support, your ticket, your $5 ticket to get into their show is going to mean more to them than which major promotion you decide to watch this week.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not all, but some of those guys on those shows that are drawing 150, 200 people, are working as hard, if not harder, than the people you can see on TV every week. So if you really want to see some people who are putting in the work on the ground level to really be good at this, go support some indie wrestling.
So do that. Don't forget to find us on Twitter while you're at it. Sorry, it's not a really good transition there. If you want to learn about great wrestling that's on television, no, you can find us on Twitter at Back to the Ring. You can find me at Bob Zevon as well. Is it still at Nate Bash?
At Nate Bash 450 450.
450. At Nate Bash 450. And
I can't do a 450 anymore, but it's still in my Twitter handle.
we'll do a 180.
Yeah, right. Right onto my head.
Oh. Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe not a 360. What would that be? Anyway.
All right, wrap it up, Bob. We're all starting
right.
to ramble.
All right, we're going home here, folks. I swear to God, we got this. We got the hot tag.
Thanks
we got
so much
get,
for having me.
We got to go home. Thanks again to Nate Bash for being here. It's always a pleasure. Don't forget, LWF comes to you every week. Keep an eye on At Back to the Ring as the schedule tends to change from week to week. Next episode is going to be I believe, Survivor Series 99, which is going to be an interesting one. Me and Rob are going to break that down. Also keep an eye out for, Hedorah Takes Manhattan, which is another podcast I'll be guesting on as we break down No Mercy 2006, which is a very, very, actually, it's a really good pay-per-view. It's just, it's very interesting, group of matches on it. And, of course, be ready for Back to the Ring, next episode coming down the pike. I think that's about it. You ready to go home? Let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
All right. In the words of the great Tully Blanchard, it's been your pleasure. Good night.